Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
I will fight every day to restore confidence and integrity to the Department of Justice and each of its components. The partisanship, the weaponization will be gone. America will have one tier of justice for all.
President Trump's fired Attorney General Pam Bondi. She's his ninth Attorney General, confirmed or acting, over his two terms, the most of any president in U.S. history. She oversaw the weaponization of the Justice Department, stumbling when it came to the Epstein files and prosecuting Trump's political enemies. The president's former personal lawyer, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, will replace her, at least for now. We'll talk to constitutional law professor David Cole. Then Trump moves again to unilaterally change voting laws ahead of the midterms.
One more time, ladies and gentlemen, we've got an unconstitutional order from the president that looks like he's trying to take away ballot by mail. It doesn't make any sense, especially when the courts have repeatedly told him, this is not in your purview, Mr. President.
We'll speak to the Arizona Secretary of State, who says he'll take the federal government to court. And finally, Palestinian activist Laka Cordia is free. She spent a year in an ICE jail in Texas after taking part in pro-Palestine campus protests at Columbia University.
It's been a long year and tough year in ICE dungeons. But I'm finally free, alhamdulillah. But still... But still, my battle's not done yet.
Laka Cordia will join us in studio. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's warned Tehran of more attacks to come after the United States and Israel launched strikes on civilian infrastructure in Iran. On Thursday, the U.S. bombed a major bridge under construction in the city of Karaj, west of Tehran, then attacked it again about an hour later as emergency crews were assisting the wounded. Iran says the double-tap strike on the B-1 suspension bridge killed 8 people and wounded nearly 100 others. The head of the construction company building the bridge said it had absolutely no military use and warned its destruction will worsen traffic for more than a dozen provinces in Iran.
If this is help, please redefine that term for me. They destroy infrastructure to push the country backward and weaken the spirit of our people.
Separately, Iran says U.S.-Israeli airstrikes have destroyed the Pasteur Institute of Iran, a century-old medical research center that's played a key role in combating infectious diseases in the Middle East. Iran's Red Crescent says U.S.-Israeli strikes have hit more than 113,000 civilian sites, including homes and schools, killing more than 2,000 people, including women and children, with at least 21,000 injured. Maria Martinez is the head of the Red Crescent's delegation for Iran.
We estimate that at least 3% of the population has been displaced. This represents around 1 million families, 3 million people.
Iran has published a list of major bridges across the Persian Gulf region it said could come under tit-for-tat retaliation. Following the U.S.-Israeli coalition strike on the B-1 bridge earlier in the day, Iran's targets include bridges in Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Jordan, and the King Fahd Causeway linking Saudi Arabia to the island nation of Bahrain. Iran's threat of escalation came as it announced a wave of drone and missile attacks on Gulf nations, including U.S.-owned steel plants in the UAE and a weapons factory in Israel. Iran said one attack targeted a data center of the U.S. software company Oracle in Dubai. UAE officials denied the claim. Iran also said it struck an Amazon cloud computing center in Bahrain. Meanwhile, Kuwait said Iran struck a power and desalination plant earlier today, hours after it struck an oil refinery, sparking a number of fires. Separately, Yemen's Houthis said they'd fired a barrage of ballistic missiles at Israel in coordination with Iran and Hezbollah in Lebanon. In Iraq, an Iranian-backed militia claimed responsibility for six attacks on U.S. military bases over a 24-hour period. The attacks came as two Iranian drones struck a U.S. diplomatic support facility at Baghdad International Airport Thursday evening. Israel's military says it struck more than 3,500 targets across Lebanon in the month since it renewed large-scale attacks on Hezbollah while invading parts of southern Lebanon. The Lebanese Health Ministry reports 1,345 people have been killed and over 4,000 wounded since the start of the war, with 125 children among the dead. In Gaza, a Palestinian man died from his injuries Thursday after Israeli soldiers shot him in the outskirts of Khan Yunis. The killing came after two Palestinians were killed and several others wounded in Israeli airstrike targeting a gathering of people in Khan Yunis. A relative said the strike killed a father and a toddler.
He was in his neighborhood, walking with his young son, who was 2 years old. He was carrying his son and walking in the street when a reconnaissance drone hit them directly with a missile. He and his son were martyred instantly, and their bodies were torn to pieces.
In the United Kingdom, two leaders of the Palestine Solidarity Movement have been found guilty of failing to march within a designated area set by police during a massive pro-Palestine demonstration in London last year. Ben Jamal of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign and Chris Nynum of the Stop the War Coalition said they would appeal the convictions. In a statement, Human Rights Watch said the verdict was intended to intimidate and silence dissenting voices to the UK's ongoing support for the Israeli government war crimes. Meanwhile, in France, police on Thursday detained European Parliament member Rima Hassan on suspicion of, quote, apology for terrorism over a social media post about a former member of the Japanese Red Army who participated in an attack on an Israeli airport in 1972. Hassan was born stateless in a Palestinian refugee camp in Syria as a member of the leftist France Unbowed party. She was a leader of a Gaza Freedom flotilla mission that was intercepted by Israeli forces in international waters last June as they attempted to deliver food and aid to Gaza. Critics have condemned her arrest as judicial harassment aimed at silencing her outspoken criticism. President Trump has fired Pam Bondi from her position as U.S. Attorney General amidst reports of Trump's growing frustration with Bondi's failure to prosecute his political enemies. Bondi's the second cabinet member to be fired by Trump since he retook the White House after former Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem was ousted in March. Trump said his former criminal defense attorney, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, would serve as acting U.S. Attorney General. Meanwhile, Lee Zeldin, who currently heads the Environmental Protection Agency, is reportedly a top contender to replace Bondi as Attorney General. Bondi was a Trump loyalist who oversaw the Justice Department's disastrous handling of the Epstein files. Her firing comes just months after a heated congressional hearing in which Bondi refused to apologize to Epstein survivors who were present in the room for the DOJ's failure to fully redact their names in the Epstein files. California Congressmember Robert Garcia said in a statement, quote, she will not escape accountability and remains legally obligated to appear before our committee under oath. referring to a House Oversight Committee subpoena issued against Bondi last month, set for April 14th. On Thursday, Congressmember O'Connor said Senate Democrats should impede the nomination of a new U.S. Attorney General until all Epstein files without redactions have been released.
Democrats must insist that any new attorney general will release the remaining 3 million files with no redactions other than protecting the survivors. The new attorney general must commit to investigating and prosecuting people who are all over these files and raped or abused these girls. And the new attorney general must commit to not using the Justice Department for political prosecutions. It is not enough to replace one Trump sycophant with another.
We will speak with constitutional law professor David Cole after headlines. The White House is preparing to unveil a record-shattering Pentagon budget request of $1.5 trillion for the next fiscal year. It's by far the largest year-over-year increase in a presidential military spending request since World War II. It includes funding for F-35 stealth fighter jets, new warships, including Virginia-class submarines, and Trump's Golden Dome missile defense shield, which the White House says will cost $185 billion. Meanwhile, President Trump has said the U.S. cannot afford to pay for social programs like daycare, Medicare and Medicaid amidst record military spending. Trump spoke during a White House Easter lunch on Wednesday.
It's not possible for us to take care of daycare, Medicaid, Medicare, all these individual things. They can do it on a state basis. You can't do it on a federal. We have to take care of one thing, military protection. We have to guard the country.
A new report by Oxfam International finds the wealthiest 0.1% of the world's people are hiding more than $2.8 trillion in offshore accounts to avoid paying taxes. That's more wealth than is owned by the poorest half of humanity, more than 4 billion people. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has fired the Army's Chief of Staff, General Randy George, along with two other top generals. A Pentagon spokesperson gave no reason for Thursday's abrupt firings. General George has served as a senior assistant to former Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin under President Biden. The New York Times reports he'd recently clashed with Hegseth over Hegseth's decision to block the promotion of four Army officers to become one-star generals. Two of them are Black. The other two are women. Meanwhile, Democrats on the Senate Armed Services Committee are pushing for an investigation into a Financial Times report which found Hegseth attempted to make a multi-million dollar investment in arms company stocks just weeks before President Trump joined Israel in its attack on Iran. The Trump administration's deported 12 people to Uganda, marking the first known arrival of immigrants expelled from the U.S. to the African country since striking a so-called third country agreement. Trump has pushed to deport immigrants from the U.S. to countries they have no ties to as part of his brutal immigration campaign. The Uganda Law Society vowed legal challenges, saying those deported were, quote, effectively dumped in Uganda through an undignified, harrowing, and dehumanizing process that's reduced the deportees to little more than chattel for the benefit of private interests on both sides of the Atlantic, unquote. Other African countries have agreed to receive U.S. deportees under Trump, including Eswatini, Ghana, Rwanda, and South Sudan. A Venezuelan man is suing the Trump administration after he says he was illegally detained and deported from the United States to El Salvador's notorious Secat mega prison last year. The Venezuelan immigrant, who is identified by the pseudonym Johnny Hernandez, is seeking $56 million in damages. Despite having no criminal record in the U.S. or Venezuela, he was arrested by federal immigration agents sent to El Salvador, where he says he was tortured. Brent Ward, a member of his legal team, said in a statement, quote, the Trump administration knowingly and unlawfully locked up an innocent person for 4 months in a concentration camp-like prison where he suffered torture, shooting, beatings, and solitary confinement. Our client suffered catastrophic injuries in Secat from which he will never fully recover, he said. And environmental groups have sued the Trump administration for removing protections for endangered species in the Gulf of Mexico to allow oil and gas offshore drilling. The unprecedented blanket exemption would leave several Gulf species and ecosystems vulnerable to extinction, including the critically endangered Rice's whale. The move was approved by a six-member committee chaired by Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth invoked the vote, claiming that lifting the Endangered Species Act protections in the Gulf was a matter of national security, as the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran has disrupted global oil supplies. The Sierra Club said in a statement, quote, the Trump administration's playing God with our most vulnerable wildlife by deciding which endangered species are worth saving and which can be sentenced to extinction to pad oil and gas profits. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
President Trump has fired Pam Bondi as a U.S. Attorney General amidst reports of his growing frustration with Bondi's failure to prosecute his political enemies and her handling of the Epstein files. Trump said Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche will serve as acting U.S. Attorney General. Blanche was President Trump's private attorney. Lee Zeldin, who currently heads the Environmental Protection Agency, is reportedly a top contender to replace Bondi. Blanche becomes Trump's 10th attorney general, confirmed or acting, since he first took office in 2017, more than any other president in history. Bondi's the second high-profile cabinet member to be fired by Trump in recent weeks, after former Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem was ousted in March. Bondi was a Trump loyalist who openly heaped praise on the president and did away with longstanding DOJ practice to maintain political independence from the White House. Bondi oversaw failed prosecutions of Trump's perceived political enemies, including former FBI Director James Comey and New York Attorney General Letitia James, and initiated DOJ investigations into others, including the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. Under her watch, thousands of career attorneys were pushed out or left the Department of Justice. The Civil Rights Division and the section that prosecutes public corruption were hollowed out, and Bondi oversaw the effort to obtain sensitive voter data from the states. Her firing comes just months after a heated congressional hearing in which she refused to apologize to Epstein survivors for the DOJ's failure to fully redact their names and release documents. California Congressmember Robert Garcia said in a statement, quote, she will not escape accountability and remains legally obligated to appear before our committee under oath, referring to a House Oversight Committee subpoena issued against Bondi last month to talk about Pam Bondi's tenure at the DOJ and more. We go to Washington, D.C. to speak to David Cole, professor of law and public policy at the Georgetown University Law Center and former national legal director of the ACLU. David, thanks so much for joining us. It is the front page, across the paper headline, except for one column, of the New York Times. Trump fires Bondi after bumpy tenure. Can you talk about her legacy at the Justice Department, what Pam Bondi represented, what she failed to do for President Trump and for the nation?
So I think she'll go down in history as one of the worst attorneys general we've ever had. And that's because she basically turned the Justice Department on its head. The Justice Department is supposed to be independent of the president. And the reason for that is that they're the folks who can take a U.S. citizen or any other person living in this country and lock them up. They're the people who can prosecute you. They're the people who can seek the death penalty. And so when you have a government agency that has that kind of power, it's critical that it be acting in the name of the law and in the name of justice, and not in the name of partisan politics and doing the master's bidding. She came in and did the master's bidding, and she did it poorly. She prosecuted his enemies, and those prosecutions have failed. Sometimes because judges have thrown them out. Other times because grand juries of American citizens have said there's nothing here. Her effort to prosecute members of Congress for simply informing members of the military that they have a duty not to follow illegal orders was rejected by a grand jury of citizens. As you said, she ran out thousands of people from the Justice Department. It is a decimated department. She oversaw legal opinions that authorized the summary execution of people alleged to be bringing drugs into this country by boat. She oversaw Justice Department lawyers who federal courts across this country have accused of lying to the courts, of engaging in contemptuous conduct, of slow walking and obstructing orders of courts. She decimated the Civil Rights Division, lifting consent decrees that were designed to protect us, the people of America, from police abuse, and botched in every way possible the disclosure of the Epstein files, saying she has a client list on her desk, never turned over, turning over a files of binders that she says were the Epstein files. There was nothing new there. And then when compelled by Congress to turn over the files, failing to redact the names of victims and redacting the names of perpetrators. I mean, she has been really an embarrassment to the nation, an embarrassment to the department. But I think the blame really, you know, the blame rests with her, because when you're in that role, you are supposed to be able to say no to the president. That is a critical role of the attorney general. She was never able to say no to the president. But a lot of the things she did, you know, you can blame her, but the ultimate blame goes to the president of the United States. It's he who is pressing for the prosecution of people like Comey and James Comey and Letitia James merely because they were his opponents. It's he who is urging them to engage in bogus grand jury investigations that are trying to set up ways to undermine the midterms. It is he who ordered them to stop the prosecution of Mayor New York Mayor Eric Adams for corruption. So I blame the both of them equally. And I don't think it's going to get any better with anyone who follows in her footsteps.
Juan, we can't hear you. Juan's asking a question. Go ahead.
David, you mentioned the Epstein files. I wanted to ask you about this whole issue of the subpoena that was issued to Pam Bondi to appear before the House Oversight Committee on April 14th. Nancy Mace, the Republican from South Carolina who forced a vote on that subpoena, told Axios, quote, "My subpoena still stands. I did it by name, not as the sitting attorney general." What's your sense of whether this will actually occur and her being brought before the committee even after she's been fired?
Well, the committees can call anybody they want before them to testify. And the fact that she has now been run out of office does not mean that she is free of the obligation that every American citizen has to respond to a subpoena and answer questions under oath. So no, if the committee chooses to demand that she come before them, the fact that she is no longer the attorney general does not protect her. They may also, if they're interested in what the Justice Department is going to do in the future, then she's not going to be very helpful. But if they're interested in what were the decisions she made that led to so much distrust of the department, to get to the bottom of that, she's the right person to be forced to answer those questions.
David, I just have a quick question on this issue. Is it possible that Trump fired her now? Because that would mean she would no longer have access to the documents at the Justice Department, and that he specifically is concerned about this?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know. There's lots of things he could be concerned about. I wouldn't be surprised if he's concerned about the Epstein files. He should be concerned about the Epstein files. It's one of the things that that Republicans and his base are concerned about that he is doing, and so that he's potentially implicated in. So it's possible, but it's not a tactic that would, in fact, protect any of the information in the Justice Department from the purview of the committee. They can call before them, Todd Blanche, if they want to. They can call Pam Bondi if they want to. They can subpoena whatever documents they want to. So, I don't think he's going to be able to obfuscate with respect to the Epstein investigation.
And David,
he'll
ask you about it,
but I don't think he'll succeed.
David, I wanted to ask you about another aspect of Pam Bondi's legacy, her efforts to seize state voter data. In May of 2025, the DOJ began sending letters to nearly 40 states demanding sensitive information, including driver's licenses and Social Security numbers of every registered voter. 12 states have complied. But what's your sense of this aspect of her work at Justice?
Well, this is another example of the politicization of justice. They are using the Justice Department, both with respect to these demands and with respect to the investigations in Georgia of the 2020 election, to try to depress voter turnout during the midterms, because they know they're not going to go well for them, and to set the groundwork for potentially trying to intervene in one way or another. The Justice Department is supposed to, above all, protect our rights, including, most importantly in a democracy, the right to vote. And what you see this Justice Department doing under Pam Bondi is seeking to make it harder for people to vote, not make it easier for people to vote, to deny people the right to vote, not to protect people's right to vote. Sometimes it's done in the name of claims about election fraud, but there have been virtually no evidence of election fraud. This is a kind of talking point on the Republican side that is used to justify making it hard for people to vote. But why don't they want people to vote? Because they don't want to hear what the people have to say. But I think they will hear what the people have to say in the midterms. And it will not be pretty for the president.
Back in 2025, more than 200 former Justice Department employees accused the Trump administration of the destruction of the Civil Rights Department division. The former employees allege that Bondi and Harmeet Dhillon, the assistant attorney general, killed important cases protecting people from sexual harassment, police brutality, and voting inequities. Can you talk about the significance of what has happened to the voting rights division?
So the voting rights division is, again, its job is to protect the Voting Rights Division, part of the Civil Rights Division, but the Civil Rights Division as a whole is a critical part of the Justice Department, and its job is to protect the civil rights of all Americans, the right against race discrimination, the right against police abuse, the right against sexual harassment and sexual assault, the right to vote. All of those, the right against housing discrimination, those are what the Justice Department is supposed to be protecting the people of America from. This Justice Department has essentially run out the folks who do that work and have instead turned it into yet another political arm of the White House, going after what they call woke policies and DEI policies that don't violate anybody's rights. Republicans and Democrats often have disagreements about where you should put your emphasis with respect to defending civil rights. But this department has simply obliterated the basic proposition that the Justice Department is there to protect us from wrongdoing. And